Hello, everybody. Happy Friday. Thank you for joining us on another Friday roundup from Texas Scorecard. I'm Brandon Waltons, the managing editor of Texas Scorecard. We're going to talk about a few of the big stories from our site this week, from news around the state. We're going to jump right in. First, we're going to go over with Jacob Asmussen, our Central Texas Bureau Chief, to talk about what has really become, I think, a big story at the end of the week here, which is that Tesla, the electric car company from California, has announced they'll be building a new factory. A lot of folks celebrating that. Certainly jobs are, you know, good and something to celebrate. But you wrote this week that the details might actually give taxpayers some concern.
Well, that's right, Brandon. Local county officials made a very unjust deal with Tesla this week. Tesla announced they're moving and building a gigafactory in Austin, and local officials basically changed a bunch of tax rules to give Tesla special treatment. Ultimately, Tesla won't have to pay at least $60 million in taxes over the next 10 years. So while local officials are suffocating normal citizens with taxes, they're rolling out the red carpet for a multi-billion dollar corporation.
Well, and that's what's interesting. And it's not, you know, just the city of Austin. It's actually specifically, you write in your article, you've got Travis County, which is, you know, the county, the commissioners, offered a special deal. But in many ways, the biggest deal came from the school district, which was the Duval School Board.
That's right. The Del Valle School Board, they capped Tesla's property value, which means, unlike normal citizens who own a house, right, your value goes up every year and local entities tax you more. The Del Valle School Board says, you know what, Tesla? Your property value only has to go this high, so we'll only tax you this much. And ultimately, that will save Tesla $50 million over the next decade. You know, if only normal citizens could get that kind of treatment from the school board.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out how exactly you sign up for that. And I think it's important to note as well, I mean, Tesla was pretty much, from what we've seen, they had a spot picked out. There was lots of talk for months that they were going to be moving here. It seems to me that they didn't really need any of this treatment. They were already planning on building the factory here.
That's such a great point, Brandon. Nathan Jensen, a University of Texas government professor and a critic of these deals, said that in three quarters of these type of deals, the company is going to build in that place anyway. So not only are local officials making a very unjust deal, giving these companies special treatment, but most of the time they're laughably unnecessary. I mean, this deal with Tesla, $60 million in tax breaks over the next decade, to Tesla is like getting a third salary. I'm not sure a $13 bonus is going to be what sways you to pick a location, right? And so it's they're unjust and they're laughably unnecessary.
Yeah, and as an aside, by the way, it's currently even illegal to buy Teslas directly in Texas due to some of the protectionist laws we have on the books. But that's a topic for another day. I guess there's a silver lining here for taxpayers who live in different parts of the state. And that is that Governor Abbott's spokesman has said that there's no money from the Texas Enterprise Fund being used for this, correct?
Correct. At least that's a good thing. But again, meanwhile, local officials are suffocating normal working citizens with taxes. I mean, just in Travis County, you know, the average homeowner is paying $400 more to the county than they did just 11 years ago. But again, the bottom line in this story, if only local officials treated normal citizens like they treat Tesla.
Well, and you know, when you think about Central Texas, you think of Austin, I think you think of live music. You have an interesting article up at texasscorecard.com this week about how these shutdowns are affecting Austin's live music scene. And it's not just about, you know, oh, this is sad because this is entertainment, this is fun for folks. It actually has some pretty serious economic impact as well.
Well, absolutely. Austin is the live music capital of the world. And now local officials are threatening to kill the live music, right? So there was a recent survey done of local area businesses, and there were some pretty dire findings for the live music industry. A majority of live music venues said they will not survive 4 months or less, I believe, until October, essentially. Most of them will be killed off. One survey respondent said even as much as 90% of them will be killed off by November, essentially. And Steve Sternshin, one of the local live music venue owners, he said that of the 50-something venues in the city, there might only be 5 or 10 left after all of this.
Wow. And it's just a snapshot. I mean, it's one industry, but we know that these shutdowns have affected a lot of industries. And so it's something certainly to watch. Hopefully local officials will change their tune soon. Thank you for joining us, Jacob.
Thanks.
And now we're going to head over to Dallas. We're going to speak with Robert Montoya up in the DFW Metroplex. Robert, you had a piece this week that really, really shocked a lot of people. And that was about some documents that were obtained from Plano ISD of some pretty radical Marxist documents that were being suggested to use in response to Black Lives Matter.
Yeah, hey, Brandon. Oh, sorry, I was testing my new face mask. Anyway, so yes, on July 10th, there was a document floating around social media that looked like it was from Plano ISD counselor Diane Evans to two of her fellow counselors. And in this document, it contains stuff from a webinar called Understanding the Black Experience in America and has a suggested reading list of fine works such as terrorist Muammar Gaddafi's Green Book, Che Guevara's Guerrilla Warfare, Black Like Mao, Red China and Black Revolution, and of course, the Communist Manifesto. True quality readings up there with, A Christmas Carol and other great
books. Great guy. Yeah, all the greats. I mean, this is really surprising, though, because, we've known that obviously this sort of material does get in one form or another discussed in public schools. But it's one thing to see it listed out here. And it's not just the suggested reading list or watch list, but there's also some suggested actions, essentially this document being, okay, if students are interested in this Black Lives Matter movement, encourage them to defund the police.
Yeah, when you look at the email, for those who are participating in the webinar, it actually suggests some actions you can make to help allegedly improve Black lives, actions like cutting funding to the cops. Where have I heard that before? And also donating to anti-white supremacy work like Black Lives Matter. Well, to look into this to confirm whether or not this document is authentic, we sent a press inquiry to the entire board of Plano ISD and also to Ms. Evans herself. We got back a response from Superintendent Sarah Bonser, who said, "We can confirm the webinar attended by the employee was not authorized, supported, nor is it in use by Plano ISD."
Well, that is good, at least, or at least sounds encouraging for those who live in Plano ISD. Of course, the question is, well, this webinar was offered. How many other districts have counselors taking part in it?
Yes, that is another question. And this even caught the attention of Plano City Councilwoman Shelby Williams, who said in a statement, "I urge the Plano ISD Board Administration to conduct a very thorough investigation into this issue and to take appropriate action to ensure such an insidious ideology is neither promoted nor encouraged within our school system."
Wow, just an absolutely amazing story, Robert. And you have another story as well. Actually, I should rather say a series of stories, but talking about how these mask mandates that we've seen pop up statewide obviously have exemptions, or they have exemptions for health and for other reasons, but not a lot of businesses or not a lot of people know about that. And you've written some articles that question whether or not government's doing a good job or an adequate job of making sure people know about that.
Yes, this is actually very tragic. I've been doing a series on not just the mask mandates, but all mandates, but coming down because of the coronavirus, but particularly the masks. I've done interviews with rape victims. I've been talking with people who have health issues who say, I cannot wear a mask. For people like rape victims, it triggers their memories of their rape when they put the mask on. And there are people who are like, I have asthma. I can't wear one. And these are the people where, you know, Section 2 of Governor Abbott's mandate addresses saying, look, they don't have to wear a mask. But most of the public, they're not aware of this. They've never heard Abbott say this. And most businesses aren't even aware, which creates a lot of conflict for these people when they go out in the public.
Right. And former State Representative Matt Rinaldi, you've got a great quote from him saying, it's put businesses and individuals in a very tough position.
Yes. We sent an inquiry to Mr. Rinaldi. He's a healthcare lawyer. He practices in this. And what he said to us was, the American with Disabilities Act prohibits businesses from asking about disabilities. A business is risking liability if they ask anything beyond whether disability prevents them from wearing a mask. Abbott has really put businesses in a tough spot. And this is something that some of the people who've talked to me have said, like when they say, I can't wear a mask, I have an exemption, they'll get asked, well, what is it? Which, as former State Representative Nolly says, that should not happen.
Right. Absolutely. Well, we know you'll be following that, Robert. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you, Walton.
Now, for our hero and halfway, let's start with the hero this week. Were you a delegate to the Republican Party of Texas Convention? If so, you're definitely one of my heroes this week. That's right. If you remember from last week, Republican Party of Texas's biannual convention was held last weekend virtually after the Democrat mayor of Houston, Sylvester Turner, moved it online. And to put it nicely, I'd say it was a bit of a debacle. Okay. It was plagued with technical problems. Delegates weren't able to get their credentials. Went on into the early hours of the morning. In fact, went as late as 4 in the morning for some voters, for some delegates on Sunday night, or Monday morning, I should say. But they did get some important business done. One of those things has been the legislative priorities. Now, this is something the Republican Party of Texas has done for a number of years now. And essentially what happened was you had the Legislative Priorities Committee pick 15 things from the platform that they want the legislature to get done. And then the delegates, the grassroots people who showed up, who were glued to their computers all weekend, narrowed those down to 8. We're going to drop those in the comments right now so you can read about them. But just, you know, looking at these are things like election integrity, religious freedom, children and gender modification, banning those surgeries with minors, abolition of abortion, constitutional carry, taxpayer-funded lobbying, a lot of really, really important priorities. Now, of course, it is up to the grassroots in the party and grassroots conservatives to go out there and to go tell their lawmakers, the Republican lawmakers, that this is what they expect when they return to the legislature in January. But for sticking through, for staying through all the technical problems and going into the early hours of the morning with not a lot of rest, definitely the folks that were involved in the Republican Party of Texas Convention this week, our delegates, this week's heroes. There's actually one more legislative priority that I did not mention, and that is monument protection. Now, this is something we've seen happen not only in Texas, but all across the country. And that has been this idea that leftists have come in and tried to take down monuments of folks who were either involved in the Confederacy or even in the case of the Republican Party of Texas's plank, talking about the Alamo Cenotaph and wanting to move those. Well, just days after the Republican Party of Texas voted to make that a legislative priority, Congress, led by Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats, voted to remove some Confederate statues from the U.S. Capitol. Now, Pelosi didn't have any problem wrangling up her Democrats. She got every Democrat vote she could. What was surprising was a small minority of Republicans that joined along with her, including 6 right here in Texas. Those folks are Will Hurd, Dan Crenshaw, Mac Thornberry. Excuse me. Good Lord, I lost the list. There we go. Sorry, not Mac Thornberry. Excuse me. Will Hurd, Michael Burgess, Van Taylor, Dan Crenshaw, Michael McCall, and Pete Olson. These 6 folks voted with Democrats to take down these statues in D.C. and play along with Democrats. Now, for directly violating a legislative priority of the Republican Party of Texas just days after it was passed and for trying to erase history, those congressmen are this week's halfwits.
Thank you for listening to this week's Friday Roundup from Texas Scorecard. Remember, you can head to the Empower Texans Facebook page at 11 a.m. every Friday to watch the show live and get your questions in.